Welcome into the Rinkwise podcast. I'm Evan Marinofsky. That's Pat Donnelly. Pat, what's up?
Not much. Good to be in studio. People don't have to look at our little. We had a lot of blue going on at one point.
We did.
Yeah, good to be back.
It was a lot of blue. I think you went and switched. You're like, we need like a gray background, we need a different background. But now we got this. It's like we're in front of a brick house. So it's a little classier. Yaz in studio with us. A
little exposed brick to drive up the rent.
Exactly.
So it's classier because I'm here with you, Evan?
That's exactly it. Oh, you class up the joint, as the kids say.
Yes.
But it's been nice to be back. We were doing so many podcasts in such a short amount of time that we were just cranking them out on Zoom at 11:30 at night during prep, during MIAA. But now it's done. It's over. Everything's done. High school's wrapped up. Prep's wrapped up. And we're kind of in the off season. So I guess we don't work for the next couple months. That's what it is. We're off. Obviously, the people know that's not the case. But this episode, we want to focus on MIAA, wrapping up the MIAA season, reflecting back what we remember from this season. Championship day was, I think, about a week ago from when we're recording this. It was your first championship day, Pat. What'd you think of it?
Well, I remember last year you saying how long of a day it is. There's always a game that goes to overtime. And sure enough, first game of the day, St. Mary's and Notre Dame Hingham set the entire day back an hour and 45 minutes going to triple overtime.
You texted me like, we're going to an overtime. I'm like, no. And then like, we're going to a second overtime. I'm like, you're kidding. You're like, we're going to a third. I'm like,
they're bringing the Zamboni out for the third overtime.
This day is screwed up. And lo and behold, it was. The last game didn't start till 9:30. Thank God no other games at OT.
Well, I remember you were saying like you didn't have high hopes for the second half of the day, but then they all delivered.
Well, that was the big thing. And we kept saying up there when I got there, like, I was like, oh, these matchups are okay. Because no high-flying matchups. When the Division I boys, you had the number one overall team against a really hot public school. Yep. And you had a similar type thing in Division II boys with Tewksbury and Boston Latin. And I didn't know a ton about Boston Latin. Obviously, you and I both know a lot of people who went to Boston Latin. Two of my roommates are from Boston Latin. So they're like, oh, you but down Boston Latin, this and that. But a lot of people were like, I don't know, Tewksbury's such a wagon, and they were. And then even the Division III game, it was similar type thing. It wasn't 1v2, it was 1v6. But the girls' matchups were good. Great. Those are the top two teams in each division.
Yeah, it was a little bit of like, it had to end this way. It had to. You had NDA, number one seed. They stole it from St. Mary's the very last second of the regular season, but St. Mary's said no thanks, or said nope. They ended up winning. And then D2, you had number one Duxbury. Again, one of those sort of, you don't want to say team of destiny because they've done it before. They've been there, done that. But, you know, you just had that feeling all year long that they were maybe the best team in all of girls hockey in MIA. Probably gave a lot of teams in D1. And plus, girls MIA, there's not a lot of discrepancy between D1 and D2 girls. But you had them taking on Falmouth, which is like, Falmouth's going to be back. I think 9 freshmen and an 8th grader. Wow. And only losing, I think, 2? I could be wrong. Only a handful of seniors. Mm-hmm. Shorter roster, only 17 skaters. You're only down one. And not all MIA teams roll their lines anyways. And freshman goalie, Aspen Devlin. So it was really interesting to see Duxbury, who, good mix of young and old, plenty of experience, kind of that powerhouse, going up against, I don't want to say new kids on the block, but like the team on the rise up in Falmouth.
Yeah. And that was, Duxbury kind of dominated that game. Yeah. And then up at that Division I girls game delivered, man. That was I wasn't there for it. You were there for it. But that was the real big game of the first half.
And it was like starting the day off with all the drama. The fact that they brought the Zamboni up.
It's hilarious.
Before the third overtime. Especially OT's 8 minutes. So you're only playing a half an extra period on fewer skaters on the ice. You're not chopping up the ice as much.
Have the guys come out with the shovels.
Yeah, dry scrape or something. And they almost used all the third overtime too. The winner was like with 2 minutes left in triple OT.
You texted me that you were like, it almost did go.
I really thought
overtime.
We were going to 4. But yeah, that was a crazy game. You had NDA scoring early. It was Devin Moore shot from range. Kind of one of those like St. Mary's. Every time Notre Dame scored, you could feel St. Mary's like, oh, not again.
Yeah. Especially when they scored at the end.
Yeah. When they, St. Mary's got upset by Shrewsbury last year. So NDA takes a 1-0 lead. St. Mary's ties it. And then Sarah White goes to work for Notre Dame. 2 quick goals in the second. They're up 3-1. And the St. Mary's just like lifeless. But then Melissa Norton gets them on the board in front. And then Bella Freitas, just all season long.
Nasty.
Most electrifying player in the MIAA. End-to-end rush. She beat the second defender in the neutral zone. Had one more to beat. There's like, if she gets her, there's no way she's not scoring.
No, yeah.
Gets around it. Chips it in. And then in the third again, it's Norton to Freitas. 4-3 St. Mary's, you're like, all right, they're not going to look back now. But they did. So,
but they did.
It was especially you're looking at the empty net sequence. And Notre Dame struggling to maintain possession, get a chance to pull Ava Larkin. They really couldn't until it felt a little too late, but they get her pulled. I think it was an icing last minute faceoff, tied up. Sarah White like gets her stick free, shovels a backhand there, and off the faceoff, I'm like, oh man, John Finley's like really, really drawing something up here. Emma Burke is lined way out to the right, basically in the next dot, and she's right there for the rebound, kicks to her stick, buries it. And then, you know, we were just there for another hour in that game. But, you know, so I thought Notre Dame was actually like the better team for most of the overtime. St. Mary's might have had more chances just because of the run and gun style. And they're also like shorthanded, like thinner roster to begin with. Casey Litwin was out with, I think, a broken leg. I could be wrong, but she was in a walking boot. I believe I read somewhere it was a broken leg. And so you're really down to Reagan Sullivan and Vanessa Hall as your kind of minutes eaters on defense. And Reagan Sullivan, I believe it was an injury, left the game. She didn't play at all in overtime. Vanessa Hall played every minute of every overtime.
That is stunning to me.
And, like, you could tell at the end she's gassed. She had blocked a couple shots earlier in the game. And then there's a sequence, I believe it was the triple overtime, blocked, like, four shots in a row.
You know how good a shape you have to be in to attempt that?
Yeah. And then the last shot clearly, like, stung her, and she's kind of hobbled out there. It was on a penalty kill. Gets the clear, stays out there.
She tries to go to the bench. She's like, we're not opening this door for you. You're staying out there. Yeah.
So that was really impressive. And then Notre Dame was kind of playing with fire the whole overtime, taking a lot of penalties. And St. Mary's gets another power play late. Of course, they send out the freshman line, Kira Toomey, Alyssa Norden, Bella Freitas. Hall's back there, of course. One face off, Hall to Toomey, down low to Freitas. Deeks, you want to say she did it in the pass on purpose, but it just seemed like shovel the backhand on net. Maybe it gets there. It was a perfect pass to Alyssa Norden at the back post.
And that was a fitting way for it to end.
Yeah.
So it was an exciting game for sure. And people are wondering, like, did anything else happen the rest of the day that was noteworthy? Anything big? Like, was there anything? And, well, obviously the big thing is the ending to the St. John's Prep Winchester game. That was something, wasn't it?
That was a lot to get into there.
Yeah, a lot. And it's been discussed at length. Spit and Chicklets talked about it. It's been on all the local news stations. Yeah.
When it's on local news.
Oh, my God.
Thing. Like, when local news cares enough to pick it up.
Can we come talk to you? Can you set the stage for what happened? I'm like, you can watch the video. I mean, it's pretty clear. Pretty big. I mean, you and I we're both young, but we've been watching sports for a while, covering sports for a while. I've never seen an ending like that ever.
Yeah. It's so tough because it was such a great game.
Yeah.
And for it to end the way they did, the Winchester coach, I'm blanking on his name. Sorry.
Gino Cacciadorian. Yes.
The way he handled it, was as good as it gets.
Oh,
You know, saying like, I wish social media wasn't there so we could just, you know, maybe St. John's Prep was a better team. They won, and we don't have to worry about it. But the kids know. Everybody knows.
I don't even know how. Like, if you're Winchester,
that's the hardest
part. Like, they were so stunned on the ice because it's just. I mean, it was like everyone thought that was going to OT.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, the puck looked like it left the zone. That actually didn't. They got that call right.
Yeah.
It was onsides, but just for it to happen like that, and for that whole thing to take place, and then it's done, and then the refs meet for like a minute, and they go, "All right, well, it's a good goal," and that's it, and. Even in that moment, like, I thought I saw the light go off before the puck went in, but it's also like that's split second.
Yeah,
you know, don't know.
You're like, oh, the light's not perfect, and like, even the siren is delayed by like a Mississippi.
Exactly.
Even during Bruins games too, it wasn't specific to that day.
It is, and I think that's the tough part, and I think that's what's tough for the refs on the ice. What I think is difficult is you have all that video. You and I have texted about this extensively. You have all this video at the Garden, and you use it all day. For the replay, it's on the Jumbotron. They have an overhead camera. You can sync it to the clock. They're able to do that. And to not say, hey, you know what? We know we don't have a thing on video in our rules. We don't typically do this, but this is the Division I state final.
It is the game.
It's the game of the day. Even if it was Division IV, whatever game, right?
Yeah,
like, it's still a state final. Yes. And it's the final play. It is the buzzer beater. It's to win the game. It's not like this, you know, it was a 4-1 game and this made it 5-1. This was to win it. To not say, hey, we're going to pull out the iPad or we're going to take a look at the big board. And you know what? If they did it on the big board, St. John's Prep fans would be like, oh, yeah, there's no debating it. You can't be like, oh, no, you called it a goal, though. Like, no, like, It went in after the buzzer. And yeah. I think, yes, would it have been awkward if all the prep players had to go pick up their sticks and gloves and be like, oh, we haven't won yet? I mean, that'd be a crazy mood swing. But
there was,
still.
Like, the college hockey game a few years ago. It was, like, the CCHA championship.
Was that Minnesota State?
Yeah, Minnesota State, like, Bemidji.
I remember that.
And they made him come back, like, an hour later.
Yeah. And Minnesota State still won.
Yeah.
But that's the tough part is, like, you can't replay it. It's just final, and I don't understand it. You have all the video there. Yep. Use it.
Yeah, it's like everybody with a cell phone who has taken video knows. Everybody in the building who, like, you know, got a second look at it knows. And, like, I understand, you know, not wanting to open up the can of worms and get into replay, like, a lot. Like, in especially when you get to other tournament games and rinks that don't have the capability.
Exactly.
But you're at TD Garden.
Yeah.
There are cameras everywhere. You have the big board. You have all sorts of equipment that can handle this sort of thing. Take 30 seconds and look at it and get the call right, because I said to you, like, I felt sick to my stomach for the seniors on Winchester
who
are, that's their last hockey game ever, and it's decided that way.
That's a huge one, and that's the tough part, is, like, you know, whether or not St. John's Prep would have won in overtime, you know, again, that will be a what if forever. Same with Winchester.
Yeah.
But, you know, for it to end like that, where it's, and then you also have to take it the other side, and I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this, but it is true. Kids from St. John's Prep, forever now, when you look up Johnny Tye game-winning goal, I mean, first of all, it's going to be after the buzzer.
Yeah.
But it's always going to have that little asterisk next to it. And it's not for them, which is, you know, they're champs. They are champs. But at the same time, it's always going to have that, like, well, yeah, but, and that's the that also stinks for them too.
Yeah, you wrote the story about what it's like to lose, but even for the kids that win, you're back for Thanksgiving at the local dive, and, you know, you're telling the story. Oh, Johnny, remember the game winner? It's like, oh yeah, but even your own friends and fans are just like, yeah, but.
And for the, like, for, it's funny, like, when I wrote that story, my old high school coach was like, oh, we were close there in that second half of that game. We could have, and that's like, we could have, we lost. Whereas if you're Winchester forever, you're like, man, imagine if we get to play overtime against those guys.
Yeah.
And should have, I mean, completely should have. And I think that's the tough part, but I think it goes back to, there's going to have to be something. And I think with the amount of public schools and just accounts I saw tweeting about it, there has to be, I would be shocked if there is not a change, if there's not some, because as you said, you can't do, or be impossible to do video like at the Garden, at Gallo, or Loring, or Stoneham.
And especially, we all complain about how the NHL, to a certain extent, with the offsides reviews, like 30 seconds after a play, or even you go to a Hockey East game, it's review forever for no reason.
It takes
like
forever.
Challenge for head contact, challenge for offside, goal interference. They can challenge everything in Hockey East, and all college leagues. Nobody wants it to turn into that at all. But you're at TD Garden, championships on the line. You should be able to take a look.
100%. And I think that, I wonder if they bring back goal judges. That's been a big hot topic. I know they used to have them. They took them away.
Yeah, but I kind of wonder, like, you look at it in real time, what good is a person behind the glass?
That's what I keep going back to.
You have to get the video. And, like, maybe goal judges for, like, the regular tournament games, or especially if you get to, like, the semifinals and you're at, like, bigger rinks that might be able to accommodate stuff like that. But I think the video is what you need for, again, TD Garden.
I agree. And the other thing is, like, so, okay, you're going to have a guy or a girl sit behind the glass and just kind of, like, on a stool, like, peer into the net. Like,
yeah. And, like, in real time, none of us, like, yeah, you could probably tell. It's like a buzzer beater in March Madness right now. Like, real time, you're like, oh, that didn't leave his hands. But maybe it did. Like, it's tough to make that call in real time.
You need the replay. Yeah. And you have it.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, people are like, oh, there's so many cell phone videos in the Garden that they should just look at that. Well, can't do that.
Yeah, no.
You can't go up to Jimmy in the 15th row with his camera and be like, hey, can we just take a look at that real quick?
Yeah,
like,
let me zoom in all the way.
Like, I was doing it with Tom Mullerin from the Herald. I was next to, was videoing it. And I was like, show me that video. And we're like stopping it. We're zooming in. We're screenshotting it. Like, yeah. And that's the thing. And I think, but at the Garden, you have it. And in the game after, they literally showed a replay.
Yeah, they're
from
showing
above.
Replays. Yeah.
From above. I'm like, you have it. By the way, credit to Boston Latin and Tewksbury, because after that game happened, SJP and Winchester, everyone was kind of like, whoa. And everyone was still, like, decompressing from that. So I don't think anybody watched the first half of the period of that game.
Yeah.
But then credit to Boston Latin for being like, hey, we're legit and we're going to win this game. And they did so in a big way in that third period. So exciting day, controversial day, a day we'll never forget for good and bad reasons. Depends on the side you were on.
Yes.
I think we'll see some change from it, which I which is good. If there isn't, that would be outrageous, given that that happened. So let's discuss some storylines from the year. We'll do boys, we'll do girls. I want to get into big picture MIAA stuff. Everybody always says, I mean, now really more than ever, the MIAA sucks, and this and that, and it's a terrible organization, and it's dying, and this and that. So I want to get into that. I want to, like, look at that from a rational perspective, because you hear a lot of that, but I don't know if a lot of thought is put into those opinions. Because yes, the MIAA has some real problems, but I don't think it stinks. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's dying. I think there's a change happening in the MIAA. I want to get to that in a bit. But I want to talk this season first. On the boys' side, I didn't think the top teams were that great. SJP, I thought, was clearly the best team.
Yeah.
No doubt. I think even if SJP loses that championship, it would be hard to not rank them number one for the season. They were the best. They were the best team by far. Zverian was a solid number two, but Zverian could never beat St. John's Prep. They had trouble with them all year. That didn't change in the playoffs. So, I thought that any of those teams at the top, in that top 10, top 15 could make a run. And I think it's fitting that in Division One, Winchester got all the way there. I had Winchester as a sleeper team, but they were my last sleeper team. I thought of the publics, we talked about this on the show.
Marshfield, Reading.
I thought Marshfield for sure was going to be the public school in it, because I thought they were built that way. And they almost were. They lost on a shootout, which is a whole nother thing. We've discussed that though. But, you know, credit to Winchester. I just think that top to bottom, CM was good this year. They were not as great as they were last year. Zverian was solid. They had some interesting young prospects, but they clearly had a tough time with St. John's Prep. St. John's Shrewsbury was great at the beginning of the year and then kind of fell off. Archbishop Williams lost in the first round to Weymouth. I think that's the biggest upset in this tournament format history. So I thought that the teams at the top were okay, but they're susceptible to losing to teams below them. That's what happened.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of parity, but I think those teams at the top weren't as talented as maybe in years past.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially when you look at just the amount of, and this, again, it's another conversation, the amount of privates that lost to publics.
Yes. A lot.
Yeah, and it's like, and even it was private on private, but you know, Arlington Catholic is a really low seed, upsetting Pope Francis.
Yeah,
just the parity, like you said, I think was really deep this year.
It was, and I think it made it more interesting. I didn't feel like, again, I had St. John's Prep in kind of tier one. Everybody else was kind of scattered below. Mm-hmm. Pope Francis was another team that, you know, lost some big pieces from last year. They were good this year, but I never felt that they were, you know, definite tournament. I mean, I think when we talked, I even had them losing earlier than the Elite Eight or whatever. So it was a good season. I just didn't think the top teams were as good as they were, that the parity was pretty solid. And that was I thought St. John's Prep was just kind of the best team this year. And that was, it made sense that they won. Winchester almost did it. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of hits it what we talked about before of like what a public school can do to a private school and like in a one game type of thing. I mean, if SJP and Winchester play a seven game series, Prep probably wins that 4-2, 4-1.
Yeah.
But one game is, and I think that on Sunday, Championship Sunday, it showed it.
Yeah.
Girls-wise, what were sort of your big takeaways this year?
So, girls was a little interesting this year because, like, I know we all the time, prep in high school, we harp on experience, yep, seniors, juniors. But you had Falmouth, like, perhaps the youngest team in the state, 10 freshmen and eighth grader. St. Mary's lost all those pieces from last year. Very young team, entire first line of freshmen. They're lighting it up. They win.
Yep.
And even, like, Archbishop Williams didn't have a good start to the season, super young team, but they were in the semifinals at the end. I think you saw a lot of like, not like buck sort of bucking that trend, but you had, you know, your Duxbury's and your NDAs who were super experienced, mm-hmm, super like balanced top to bottom, making their runs too. But I thought it was really interesting. The younger teams made a lot of noise this year, especially you look at Falmouth, they'll be back. Archbishop Williams, really interesting case. They'll be back for sure, especially like, those younger girls getting the experience of, I think they were 1-6 to start their season, and next thing they're in the Final Four losing to St. Mary's in OT, a game they probably should have won. St. Mary's was not the better team in that game.
That was the Loring, right?
Yes. Yep, I was with you for that. Overtime for that. Just to get that experience of sort of turning your season around and playing meaningful hockey all throughout, really key for them.
Yeah, and I think it's great. you know, in this job for both of us, we love seeing the next big things, right? We love getting on top of the people coming up, you know, and we'll get into it with a separate prep episode, but some of the rookies and the eighth graders, freshmen. I know some teams even had seventh graders.
Yeah, Burlington had a couple seventh graders playing huge minutes.
Yeah, and like, it's a really interesting thing. And I think to see them not just succeed, but to stand out, but to win,
yes,
to actually have tangible success, I think is good for girls MIA, girls prep. And I think it shows how good the talent is coming from this region for that. Which is a perfect segue to this. And as I want to dive into this a little bit with the MIAA. A lot of people say, oh, the MIAA is dead, especially on the boys' side, the talent. And there's a legitimate thing. I mean, I don't know how much I can't imagine colleges were watching a lot of MIAA this year. I'll put it that way. Prep coaches watch it for whether it's post-grads, whether it's kids coming in and repeating as sophomores or juniors. But for colleges, it's not a big place for that. It just isn't. And a lot of people are saying, I see it on Twitter. I saw someone say like, oh, if they bring the Super 8 back, kids are going to come back to their St. John's preps and CMs and Arlington's. And I'm like, well, I don't think that's the case. Yeah. Super 8's great. We would all love it back. I don't think that's the issue. Saying though that someone's going to stay at St. John's prep instead of going to Cushing or Avon or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, is the argument that it means so much? Okay, sure. But if they're that good that they're going somewhere else for development, I mean, prep is better for development. I mean, they've established that. And if it's in terms of, hey, I want colleges to see me more, well, the Catholic Conference teams play each other numerous times throughout the year.
Yeah.
Arlington and Reading and those teams play Hingham. They play tough schedules. You can go see those games throughout the year. It doesn't have to be the Super 8. So that argument I don't get from that perspective. So in terms of the having college talent, having a kid that BU is going and watching and hoping to recruit,
yeah,
those days are probably over. There might be an anomaly here and there. Kid's dad is a coach somewhere, mm-hmm, or, you know, they really want to play for their hometown. Then sure, like that could happen. But where the MIAA is fortunate is you'll always have kids like you and me.
Yeah.
We're fine hockey players. We're good. We're good for that level. We want to play for our hometowns, not going to play after high school. We just want to have fun with our buddies that we grew up playing with, mm-hmm, and want to win a state championship. That's what and that's what the MIAA has going for it. And I will still hold that the MIAA championship day and the lead up to it is awesome. No matter the talent, the stakes are just so high and it means so much to people around here that doesn't matter.
Yep.
That will always be good. Now, the talent was overall less than it was last year, I thought. And it's been going that way for a while. But you will always have kids who want to play. You will always have kids who are solid and are good and are talented. And that's fine. You don't the days of it being a breeding ground for, as I said, college or juniors or whatever, probably over. Mm-hmm. But in term, and I'm not saying it's fully overall, it's probably near over. I don't want to make any declarative statement. As I said, there could be kids who come in. But you'll always have kids like us, like the kids from Winchester, or like a lot of the kids on prep. You're Jake Vannis of the world, who are Princeton lacrosse commits,
yep,
who are like, hey, I want to play hockey with my friends. It's a fun, hockey's very fun for me. Mm-hmm. He's also nasty, so that helps. And that's kind of where I think the state of the MIAA is. Now, rules-wise, that's a whole nother topic. I mean, there's a lot of things there, shootouts, video replay we can get into. But yeah. I think the state of it, you'll always have kids who are going to play. Mm-hmm. You just, the teams combine, like the towns combining is where like that gets kind of like, oh, really? But I think you'll always have players. I don't think it's dead. I don't think it's a horrible organization. They're good people. They have some flaws. And I think this offseason will be big in terms of kind of like fixing them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think what we're seeing when it comes to talent with the girls' side is all those young teams we mentioned.
Yes.
The girls that have been at St. Mary's since sixth grade, Archbishop mm-hmm. Williams for middle school, Falmouth kids playing up and stuff, and Burlington too. I think what gets interesting there is when you talk about a Bella Freitas or a Vanessa Hall or an Emma Burke at Notre Dame, is those kids playing big time minutes off the hop and contributing right away, especially Bella Freitas, 48 goals, mm-hmm. just bananas. Will they stick in the MIAA or will they get poached?
Yeah.
And St. Mary's is an interesting case because Frank Pagliuca has been great at keeping girls around.
He's incredible at that.
Yeah. So I think that's really just something to keep an eye on moving forward.
It is. And I think on the girls' side, it's like it's totally different because, yeah. And the other thing I'll add about on the boys with MIAA is a lot of people say, oh, people are leaving the MIAA like crazy. Sure, a lot of there are talented kids. There were a couple last year. There will be some more this year. But kids are leaving every level early. They're leaving prep early. Yes. Like prep is also becoming younger because they're the really high-end kids are moving on to the USHL before their senior year, before their junior year even. Yep. I mean, we had Gavin Cornforth at Thayer, left after his freshman year to go play for Duquesne. So like, not Duquesne, Dubuque. It's March Madness. I said Duquesne. But everyone's leaving to go to juniors early. Now the question is, and now this offseason we'll dive into it with some guests who are a little bit more in it than we are in terms of junior hockey. Will that ever end? Will that bubble like pop? You know, will we get to a point where kids are like, everyone's leaving too early, man. I want to stay where I am and kind of play this out. I don't want to jump to the USHL or the BCHL early and then kind of get lost in the shuffle. But
Daly at Franklin coming back from
who?
Dan Daly.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the other thing. And like, so again, is that going to happen where kids say, I want to stay, but it isn't right now. Mm. And so I think that's another thing affecting the MIAA is it's not just kids leaving the MIAA, it's kids leaving prep and all that stuff to go out. The other thing I want to preface, because I don't want it to sound like I'm saying college prospects don't play in the MIAA.
Yeah.
Kid like Evan Jones, right, from Arlington is a good example. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is kids aren't staying until their senior year typically.
Yeah.
And getting taken right out of there for college. They're prospects freshman and sophomore, but then they're leaving.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see the way it's changed too, where it's gone from maybe the stepping stone for a really elite player might be MIA freshman year and then prep and then USHL, BCHL, what have you. But I remember my freshman, sophomore year at Malden Catholic, you had Matt Philippe going straight from MC to the USHL.
Yeah.
Ara Nazarian going straight from MC to, I think he played in the BCHL. I can't remember what junior league he played in, but kids would... Owen Keefe. And those kids have Division I scholarships. So it's really interesting to see the way it's sort of the extra steps been added in there. Because once upon a time, it was a Jake Wachowski finishing his career at MC, doing a post-grad at Avon Old Farms, then going to junior, and then playing at BU as a 20-year-old freshman.
Well, that's what it used to be. Was like you do your years in MIAA, you do a post-grad year at prep, then maybe you'd go on to college, or you do a year of juniors if you needed it.
Yeah, or unless you were like the clear step above, like a Matt Philippe or what have you.
Well, like I'm looking at the best is Jay Pandolfo. Did time at Burlington. He was there for, I think, like 4 years, and then he went right to BU and just started dominating.
Yeah.
Like that was the early 90s, so those days have gone. But I think the MIAA is not dead.
No.
I love seeing the people out there being like, oh, it's such a crap organization. It's like, no, it isn't. Like, they got some problems, but it's there are some issues. But it's not bad. They're not a horrible bunch of people. They're good people, and there are some upgrades that need to take place. But overall, it's a shame that the season for Division I boys ended in controversy.
Yeah.
Because that was the worst case scenario. That is the worst thing that can happen. But changes need to be made. But I think there'll always be kids from their town who just want to play for their own town. I think that's where it kind of boils down to.
Yeah.
Any other MIA thoughts before we go to overtime?
I don't think so. I think just the one to watch is if going into next season, on the girls' side, if it seems like St. Mary's and Duxbury can sort of keep the band together.
Yeah, that'll be something to watch. Falmouth will be really good again. Archie's, as you said, that'll be all a good game. We got to do some overtime with our great producer, David Yaz.
All right, Evan, sir, let's do it.
Overtime.
Overtime, where I throw out three questions to each of our panelists. They're unprepared for this, so hilarity or nonsense might ensue. Or it might be boring. You be the judge. Dealer's choice. Question number one, Evan. What is the most unusual item you've ever used as a hockey puck when a hockey puck was not available?
Wiffle ball was the popular one, but I'll always say like, one of my cousins and I, it wasn't a hockey puck. We sawed off the blades of sticks and we just had the stick itself without the blade. And we would like with a street hockey puck, would play against each other one-on-one. And that was really fun.
So you're hitting with just like a stick with
no blade. It was just I don't know what happened to the sticks to make it like that, but it was just what we had. And he wasn't really a hockey player. So it was like a way to kind of even it out. And it worked. It was actually kind of really? Fun. And we used to play against him in the garage.
You probably dominated the drills at the end of practice when coach makes you turn your sticks upside down for the penalty kill.
I was great at that. Yeah. I could handle the puck with that. So,
Pat, your thoughts on unusual puck.
I would say, you remember like playing like Little League baseball, and like the coach would have that like yellow medicine ball type of thing that wasn't completely round and bounce everywhere, and like that's how you practice like a lot of ground balls and
yep.
bounces. So like I would like shoot that off a wall and just try and like corral it with the blade of the stick.
Oh, that's
just,
interesting.
Yeah, get some like hand eye going.
I like that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Tape balls? You ever play with tape balls?
Yeah, like the locker room stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you could use actual rodents like yeah. that one player infamously did.
I never liked the golf balls or like the wooden balls. Ball like guy. They're too loud and they golf balls especially are too springy and
it's
stuff.
Like they'd like mess up my stick.
Just yeah.
Cracking the blade or something. I don't know.
Oh, you hockey players and your precious sticks. Pat, you can take this one first. It's a weird one. We've had 46 presidents of these United States. Which one would you want on your hockey team if you had to choose one? And this is in their prime. This is in their prime.
Oh, my gosh. I think for the intangibles, you got to go George Washington. You think you think of Lena leading them over the, was it the Delaware?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To inspire anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're down one going into the third period. He steps up and gives a speech to your team. I mean, come on.
Yes. The Herb Brooks of presidents. All right. That's a good answer. Evan, you?
Oh, the tough one, because they're none of them known for their athleticism, at least that I know. God. I mean, you know what? This kind of goes along with what you said. Eisenhower was a great motivator and general and this and that. So I'll say Dwight Eisenhower. Motivation. I think he was kind of smaller set. Yeah. So maybe he's a little more skilled.
He'd fit in with the offseason crowd, too. I think he was a pretty good golf guy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah. He'd be great. But he doesn't want to play golf until everybody's done. Yeah, he wants to be the last team standing. June. Exactly. So I'll give Eisenhower my bet.
No, you're both wrong. I mean, first of all, you got Lincoln sitting right there. Look at the reach on that guy.
I did think of Lincoln.
Gangly. He could probably mix it up. You got JFK. I don't know if he ever played hockey, but
young and spry.
Well, he had
big health problems, though. Is he going to be on the shelf all year? Is he going to play or what?
The guy's Irish and he's from Massachusetts. He had to have played hockey at least once in his life. So just some thoughts.
You know what? I want to add something real quick. Right. I looked up the most athletic presidents ever. It's from the Dallas Observer. It was in November of 2008. Mm-hmm. They had number one, Gerald Ford. He was an All-American center
for
Michigan. I forgot about that. Number two is Obama.
He could play hoops.
Yeah, he could play hoops. Obama would be a good one. Motivational. Like, I could see that. Mm-hmm. Number three, Eisenhower.
Really?
So I didn't know that. A linebacker and a running back at Army. The Kansas Cyclone, they called him, hurt a knee-tackling Jim Thorpe in 1912. That's according to this. I don't know if it's true or not.
Wow.
And then George H.W. Bush was a baseball player
at
Yale. So, yeah.
I mean, surviving the winter in Valley Forge doesn't get Washington any points. that's an athletic feat in itself.
Well, yeah, that's not bad. Cold weather. Yeah. Got a cold weather
they probably
sport.
Had pond hockey in Valley Forge.
All right. Final question. Evan, you can go first. What is the greatest hockey video game of all time, and why is it Sega? No, I don't know if you guys are Sega fans. I withdraw the last part.
I think it was before my time.
It was before us.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or it might have been like when we were like teeny tiny.
I thought Sega hockey endured, but that's okay. Evan, what is the greatest video
I
hockey?
Would say it's either NHL 12 or NHL 14. 14 was the year before they went to the next generation consoles and they like really messed with the physics.
Yeah, 14 was when it was at its peak.
Yeah.
And then everything went to crap. It's getting better, but it's not great.
Yeah, it isn't. And 15, at least they added like Doc Emmerich, which was cool. But like it was so much focused on the broadcast that like the gameplay was awful. 14 would probably be it. 12 I liked because you could hit through the glass and you could shoot through the glass.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Go ahead,
Pat. I would go with 12. That was my first NHL game ever, and it was
really
like, yeah. And like I started hockey pretty late. I didn't start till middle school. That was like right around when I started. It was right off the Bruins Cup run, and I was all the way in. I was playing NHL 12 all the time. I can probably name you a bunch of the songs on the soundtrack. But 14 was when the gameplay was like at its absolute best.
Yeah. See, I don't even know this because I'm an old fart. But this is for what game? The
EA Sports.
Yeah, it'd be EA. Yeah.
But the console, are you using
like Xbox 360?
Xbox.
The 360. Because I remember one year, my first NHL was 2008 with Eric Staal on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next year, for some reason, I got 2K9, which is like 2K Sports. That's totally different. And the gameplay was really weird, but you could drive the Zamboni at the intermissions, which was fun. It was, and you know what the best part was? It was sponsored by Circuit City. So like, that place went downhill so fast, but it was great.
So when you're playing those, how many different, one thing I don't get about video games these days is the controllers have like 8 buttons, and I don't know, I have no idea how you're supposed to keep track of them. Like, how many different commands were there for those hockey games? You're obviously controlling the joystick, so you're controlling which player, but
yeah,
and then you hit a button to switch, like if you want to control a different player.
Yeah,
is that the way it works?
Yeah, like the on defense, the switch is the same as like passing on offense. You got like a button to poke check, button to stick lift. You got another joystick to shoot, and yeah, also like you used to have to like tuck it into body check too. I mean, I still like on NHL 24, I changed it to the classic controls because they tweaked them a little bit this year.
They did.
They stink.
They did. They're not good. I think I have the new controls because it's taken some time to get used to. The tough part is like there's so many deeks, and it's so hard to know them because there's so many. So I don't really deek ever.
So part of the new controls is they just made a lot of deeks just in the right joystick to shoot. I would go to shoot and it would do some deke.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? Yeah. I get so mad. Then they also have, they call it like the hybrid, which is basically, I think, like the old NHL 94 controls where it's just the 4 buttons and move your guy. And
yes.
That's it.
That's what you're thinking of. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No, Sega, which we played in the 90s when I was in law school, my roommate and I played it constantly. And it was super fun. I seem to remember there being like only 3 things you had to worry about, but the big thing was that you would break into a fight, which didn't affect the game at all, but you always wanted it to happen. Like when you got a little rough, all of a sudden the fight breaks out, and then you just kind of keep hitting the joystick and somebody wins, somebody loses. And at one point the guy would go down and he would bleed on the ice. And then the next year the game came out, they got rid of the bleeding. We're like, this sucks. It doesn't, I want to make, which is immortalized in that, which me and my roommate were shocked to see. They had almost the exact same conversation we had in the film Swingers. That's immortalized there. And one of them says, this sucks. I want to make Gretzky's head bleed.
There it is, Mikey. Check it out. His head's bleeding. Mikey, check it out. His legs, little Wayne's legs.
Anyway, you both have done super well in overtime. Congratulations. And you guys can, as soon as we wrap up this pod, you can go back to your video games because you clearly know a lot about it.
Yeah, we can.
That may merit a whole episode.
We can talk more presidents. Who would be the best hockey players? That was a good one.
That was an interesting question.
I like that.
Why not?
But anyways, that's overtime, and that's this episode of Rinkwise. We got a lot coming left. We have a lot of content, as you guys know, throughout the rest of the season. And that's Pat Donnelly. I'm Evan Marinofsky. Rinkwise listeners, have a great rest of your week.